Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the recently opened Woody Guthrie Center.
I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues. I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues. I just blowed in and I'll blow back out again. I guess you've heard about every kind of blues. I guess you've heard about every kind of blues. But when the dust gets high, you can't even see the sky.
Well, the Woody Guthrie Center has been open in the Brady District for a couple of months now. Already, scholars are starting to use the archives for research, and visitors from around the country and several foreign countries have visited as well. The center features highly interactive exhibits about the singer-songwriter's life, work, and interests. And those interests include everything from lyrics to poetry, prose, and art. If you haven't been, you can spend as much as a half day or as little as a lunch hour listening and viewing the exhibits about Guthrie's life and times. But the legacy is less important to our guest today than how Guthrie's work can be an inspiration to future generations, how one person can inspire many others through art and dedication. My guest today is Dina McLeod, the executive director of the Woody Guthrie Center. She's a former classroom teacher who's been involved with the Woody Guthrie Folk Festival for a number of years, and that continues today with that association as the festival took place this past weekend. Today, she joins us to talk about how the Woody Guthrie Center will impact downtown, but also impact generations of young students viewing Guthrie's life and times. Dina McLeod is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Dina McLeod, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, the Woody Guthrie Center has been open for about a couple months now. And what's been the reaction?
The reception has just been phenomenal. The people of Tulsa have welcomed us and have been excited about what we're doing. We've had tourists from overseas. We've had someone from Holland, Switzerland, Australia. So we're bringing in that international tourist interest that we were hoping to attain, those folks who are interested in music or in Woody in particular. But the reception at the Brady Arts District and Tulsa has just been phenomenal. We've been very excited.
How's the word getting around here in this area? You know, because, I mean, there was a lot of publicity. Is mm-hmm. most of the people who come to the center from around the area?
Most of them, yes. And it just really depends on what day of the week it is as far as who is coming in. It's not uncommon for us to have visitors from Chicago or New York, one from New Jersey last week. But there is quite a bit of traffic from the local area, the regional area as well.
I think it's a great place because it's where you could spend a lunch hour there, or you could spend a half day, or maybe even as much as a full day. Even though it's a fairly small museum, the exhibits, you know, there's so much information and so much music that you could listen to.
Right. The interactives and all of the video and audio content takes a little while to get through. I would say if you're really going to sit down and go through it all, probably an afternoon or a morning, more than just an hour. However, we have people who just make a quick pass through on First Fridays, and those people always say they'll be back when they can sit down and actually listen to everything. But just that overview of what we've got, that's a good opportunity to get that. And admission from 6 to 9 on First Fridays is free. So you get to come through, do a little once over, and then say, I need to come back when I can sit down and listen to all of these things.
Well, I'm glad the reaction has been great because it is a great treasure for the mm-hmm. downtown. And it's also important for the legacy of Woody Guthrie, which Oklahoma, it's good to see we are embracing this legacy of Woody Guthrie. And before you were head of the center, you were very much involved with the folk festival in Okemah, correct?
Right. Still am, yeah.
Yeah. And how does that, too? You know, you just finished the folk festival this past weekend.
Right.
Will the two groups work together?
Well, yeah, we definitely just finished the folk festival last weekend because I'm still in folk festival
decompression.
Overdrive. Yeah. So occasionally if I pause, that's because I have lost all of my words. But the festival in Okemah and the Woody Guthrie Center are considered sister entities. While they are separate, we want to be sure that each one promotes the other. We want to do things collaboratively, much like we're sister entities with Woody Guthrie Publications in New York City, which owns the copyright of all the materials that we've got in our archives vault.
Mm-hmm. And how was the festival this year?
It was fantastic. Very strong musically. The festival itself went very smoothly, very well. Musically, it was probably one of our strongest ones we've had without having these major superstar names. Last year, we had Judy Collins, and of course, there was a large crowd for her. But this year, the crowd was just as large for John Fulbright, whom we adore. John Fulbright is our up-and-coming superstar, and he fits right into the whole vibe of what we're doing.
Yeah. Now, what is the mission of the Woody Guthrie Center in Tulsa? I mean, obviously you have this wonderful museum. You have these wonderful archives. Have scholars started using them yet?
Yes. In fact, today we've got a researcher coming in working with our archivists. So we've got those folks who have put in applications to research in the archives are starting to come in. We want to engage those folks who are academics and allow them to use the materials we have in the vault. But we also, one of our main missions is education outreach to students. As soon as school starts, we will start having school groups in and have them go through and have tours. We'll have pre-made lesson plans for teachers because as a former classroom teacher, I know that anytime a teacher hears, well, we've got this really cool place for you to bring your kids, the immediate reaction was, oh, I'm going to have to figure out how to make a lesson plan. No worries there. If you want to, that's fine. If you'd rather use our lesson plans, we're going to have a variety of those. We want to enable any student in the area to be able to use our resources. And if a teacher works for a Title I school, they need to contact us because we can have them apply for grants that will allow their transportation costs to be paid. If the school children are just unable to pay the $5 admission to the center, again, call us. If you want to bring your students into the center, we will make it possible. No problems. We want to be there for you. But in addition to coming into the center, we want to enable the students to have a full day in the Brady Arts District. And go to some other places. So in our handouts, we include those places around us that after you come to the center, maybe have lunch at Guthrie Green and go to the glass blowing school, which is pretty fabulous, or go to Philbrook downtown and make a day of it. If you're going to bring your kids out for the day, bring them to more than one thing. So we want to work with all of those entities around us in that absolutely wonderful Brady Arts District that is just the artistic possibilities in the area are just unbelievable.
And they seem to be growing about every other week in the district, yeah.
Well, you know, 5 years ago, if you went downtown to a show at the Canes or the PAC, by the time you got out, it was just kind of dark and creepy.
And it was a group of you walking out from the show to your car, yeah.
Exactly. And now it's lit up, it's bright. You have the greenery at Guthrie Green. It's very welcoming, I think that's a wonderful thing for Tulsa.
It's at least an 18-hour downtown, if not a 24-hour downtown.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, give us a sense of what you're trying to convey to kids about Woody Guthrie through the center.
Okay, and one thing that we try to stress is that we steer away from referring to the center as a museum, because museum kind of indicates that it's a static entity, that you're just going to go and you're going to look at some stuff that somebody left behind and some artifacts and some exhibits behind glass. The center itself, Woody is at the center, but we're not creating this iconic Woody Guthrie. We want you to look and we want kids to see.
I think that icon's already been created.
Well,
though.
That's true. But it's more than that. This is how one person expressed himself, expressed his world through his creativity, through his art, through his music, painting. And then we want young people especially to realize that the way you make change in the world, the way you express yourself is to do the same thing. Whatever talents you've got, if it's writing, if it's singing, if it's acting, if it's building a table, do that and do it to the best of your ability. Take pride in what you do. And that's how you improve your world, that you don't have to come from a background of privilege or money to be an important person. I mean, I don't really think that a young Woody Guthrie ever thought that he would have a center in downtown Tulsa with all of his old papers behind glass and people coming to see it from all over the world.
His doodles and journals.
Yeah. it's pretty amazing. I mean, you keep a private journal and then suddenly it's in a vault someplace with people looking at it 60 years later.
And trying to discern what you really meant.
Right. And sometimes it's just doodles. But the sheer number of written pages of work and typed pages in the vault, it's just, it's mind-blowing.
Do you have a sense of how he worked? I mean, was it a matter of he's thinking all the time about songs, he's thinking about writing? I mean, he was writing prose as well as poetry and songs.
Right. I don't think he ever stopped writing. Because he had probably 17 to 18 years where he was highly productive before Huntington's disease started having an effect on him. So to have that many pages of written work within that small amount of time, one of the things that I really enjoy looking at is a scrapbook that Woody has put together. This particular one was from 1941 to 1943. And he would clip out newspaper articles about himself or about his appearances and tape it onto notebook paper. And because Woody was who Woody was, he would write comments replying back to the newspaper articles. Some of them he did not appreciate very much at all. But it's an interesting thing to see that, because any of us would do the same thing if we were reading newspaper articles about ourselves. Mentally, we would respond to it. He not only mentally responded to it, he responded to it in a concrete way. And so many of the things that he wrote, especially during that time, were, yes, I'm going to help anybody who needs it. It was very specific. I'll help the Oklahomans who need it or anybody else. Just you wait and see. Or why are you writing these things that are silly when you could be helping people? You need to spread that word. At its core, that was who Woody was, somebody who understood the trouble that his fellow man was going through and the need to change that.
Now, was that an exercise in venting over, you know, inaccuracies, or would he actually send it to the reporter?
No.
I mean that's the writing the angry letter and putting it in the desk and throwing it away.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure he actually wrote letters and sent them as well. There are some letters that he wrote back to and actually did send, and they were retrieved later. So, yeah, I don't think Woody was never at a loss for words.
Yeah. Well, the center is a really interesting place, and it, of course, it's using, you know, touched screens to tell the story, multimedia. For those who don't know the center, tell us a little bit about what people will experience when they come. There's a wonderful film at the beginning that that utilizes the great concert that was here in Tulsa for the centennial, and in Los Angeles, where a lot of the musicians chime in as well about his impact on them, as well as telling a little bit of his life story. What else is a part of the center?
One part of the center that many people are drawn to, especially the older generation, is the Dust Bowl exhibit. That is the only permanent exhibit in Oklahoma dedicated just to the Dust Bowl. And we've had several groups from retirement villages coming into the center, and that's always a draw for them. But that's also something that our young people need to really be aware of, because sometimes in our lessons to our young people in school, the Dust Bowl era is just kind of skirted over. I mean, Oklahoma history is just a semester class, and the Dust Bowl happens towards the end of that class, so it's pretty brief. And that is such an important part of Oklahoma history, because young people can see the resilient nature of their predecessors. And that's how they understand, you know, how you deal with tornadoes, how you deal with natural disasters, because we are a tough, tough people, from the Trail of Tears to the Dust Bowl to tornadoes. We pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off. And I think that's an important lesson for young people. In addition, we have a timeline that goes through, and you can follow Woody's footsteps from Okemah to Pampa, Texas, where he experienced the Dust Bowl, then to Los Angeles and New York and his final years. That wall in itself with the video and the audio components takes right at 55 minutes. Then we've got an interactive map, Woody's America, that has a huge amount of content. Whenever you touch these little traveling icons, it pulls up a tabbed display, and under which there are three categories. One is for Woody's history, one for Oklahoma world and U.S. history, and then music. So I'm going to just be honest with you. The only way I've gotten through all of the content on that map is I've got a printout of all of the things that are listed under each, because it is a lot of things to go through, but it's a great way of connecting to, again, how one person wrote about his world.
Yeah, and what he was doing, what was happening in the world, right, and what his output was at that particular time.
Right.
And, of course, there's also links to other people who've connected with Woody, mm-hmm, whether it's directly like Pete Seeger or indirectly like John Mellencamp, right, you know, throughout the museum as well.
Right. We have John Mellencamp's denim shirt. And it's just a blue denim shirt, but I think it may be the coolest denim shirt ever. We've got Tom Morello's guitar and cap and just a variety of things. Because Woody's influence was, again, not a static influence. So many people trace their roots for their creativity back to Woody, whether it's directly or indirectly. And that's something that we can engage any patron, but especially young people, and have them go through and see, okay, you don't think this person has something to do with Woody Guthrie? Well, let's look and see. Well, their influence was Bruce Springsteen. Well, Bruce Springsteen goes to Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan
goes to Woody Guthrie.
Exactly. So it's pretty interesting, because Woody was one of the very, very first people who wrote so specifically about the world and what was going on, and wrote protest songs. We've got the original handwritten lyrics of This Land Is Your Land on display, of course, mm-hmm, which is lovely. But so many people think that that is just a kid's sing-along, that it's just a feel-good song.
Because you only sing the first verse.
Exactly. It's one of the first protest songs ever written. Yeah. Woody was seeing what was going on in California to his fellow survivors, his fellow migrants from the Dust Bowl. And he was thinking, you know, I'm not sure if this God Bless America is right, because what I'm seeing is not this magnificent existence. Why are people being allowed to starve in this country? And so he wrote about it. And that's those verses of This Land Is Your Land that we don't normally sing in school. Those are my favorites. Those are great ones.
My guest today is Dina McLeod, the executive director of the Woody Guthrie Center in the Brady District. She also is involved with the Woody Guthrie Folk Festival, which took place this past weekend in Okemah. And we're talking about the Woody Guthrie Center today on Studio Tulsa. One of the things I really appreciate about the center is the fact, you know, Woody Guthrie used a lot of existing folk songs for his melodies, for his songs. And it's almost like sometimes when you listen to them, you'll hear a lyric that is, let's put it this way, rushed to fill the line, you know, because
right,
the story comes first rather than the music, actually, the actual melody. And so I was thinking, well, what was it about his writing process? Was he basically just using these songs as a storytelling device? But when you look at his lyrics, you know, he was editing, he was working, mm-hmm, the lyric, changing things, moving things around, just like any songwriter. That was just his quirky way of, and using that familiar melody, I guess, so that people would focus on his words.
You know, Woody thought that if somebody knew the melody, that was half the battle, you know. I mean, you use somebody else's melody, this traditional folk tune, then it's easy for people to sing along. Also, Woody didn't write music. Mm-hmm. All of his writing, there's
yeah,
not
it's
musical
just lyric
notation.
Sheets.
It's lyric sheets. Yeah. So he basically was a lyricist, was a poet. Now he could play. But, yeah, you're right. I know that the other day I was sitting in our house and I was hearing the ice cream machine coming down the street, and I was saying, why are they playing a Woody Guthrie song? Well, it was, and it was one of those traditional tunes. Same thing for, I think, a marching band in Wisconsin during the problems with the unions.
Uh-huh.
We're playing what, to me, was Union Made, and apparently it was a polka that, you know. So I think Woody was right. Since we hear those melodies still and we associate, wow, that's a Woody Guthrie tune, maybe not so much. But Pete Seeger said that revising old folk tunes was part of the folk process. So,
well, it is really an incredible center. And you mentioned once school starts, this center is going to be available for school students. Mm-hmm. But I think you're going to be doing a lot of programming as well. You've got this Guthrie Green right across the street. We're going to see music programming there as well?
Oh, absolutely. We did one concert already in June with Trout Fishing in America, Sarah Lee Guthrie and Johnny Irian and Terry Hendricks and Lloyd Maines. So the idea is to have concert series. Also, we'll have public programs. Starting this Friday, we're going to have one of the performers from the Center of the Universe Festival come in and do a public program where he talks about his writing process. He'll do a couple of songs, and then he'll have a moderator asking him questions in our theater, which is a really intimate place. It seats about 60, but the acoustics are fabulous. Right before the festival, we had kind of a pre-Woody Fest show with four performers who just came in through Tulsa instead of Oklahoma City, which was nice having them come in through our city. But they did little acoustic sets. They didn't even have to plug in or be mic'd. The sound in the theater, and the theater was packed. I mean, so it wasn't like it was to an empty room. But because of the acoustics and the way that the theater is built, it provides that more intimate experience for a concert. But, yeah, we've got several programs throughout the rest of July and the first part of August leading up to the school year.
Now, you mentioned the songwriter program. Will that be ongoing when you can have an artist come into the center, talk about their songwriting process?
Yes, absolutely. We're also working, we have a partnership with Horton Records in which Brian Horton's going to come in and have some of his artists do workshops with whomever wants to come in and have each one be a specific theme. One will be songwriting, one will be percussion. So we really want to engage those people in Tulsa, in the industry especially, or in literature. We have a partnership with the library and their One Book, One Tulsa program where they're reading the new Woody Guthrie novel.
Yes,
so,
uh-huh.
And then we're going to do a concert there in the library auditorium to wrap that up for them. So we really want to be involved in the Tulsa community and do everything we can to promote the arts within this area.
Now, you've been involved with Woody Guthrie and his legacy for a long time. What do you think the biggest surprise for people coming to the center will learn about him? To me, it's the artwork.
That's mostly what we hear. Around one of the exhibit areas, we have over 400 8x10 metal plates that are laser etched with Woody's original work. Some of them are lyrics, but a great number of them are his artwork, his drawings. And people are astonished to learn that he was actually first an artist.
An illustrator.
Right. Mm-hmm. We've also got some two of his oil paintings, really the only two that we know of in existence on loan in our exhibit right now. And people are surprised by that. We had
Now, he illustrated Bound to Glory, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, his
yes.
own book. Yeah, he did the illustrations for
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. So he was very talented as an artist and was always kind of surprised because he would do these oil paintings or draw and try to sell his artwork and nobody would buy it. But he'd go out and sing that night and people would pay him and it was just like, "What? This doesn't make sense." Cuz he's just, you know, he playing music was just that's what you do for fun. So.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with the Woody Guthrie Center. What's the next big event? I guess it'll be during the Center of the Universe Festival
right.
this Friday.
Right. We have something on the calendar, I think, every week going on as far as public programs and a variety of different artists. So we're excited about that.
scholars are beginning to come here?
Yes.
All right. Well, yes. This is a great thing. It's a great thing for our city and a great thing for the legacy of Woody Guthrie as well.
Right.
Well, Dina, we appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Dina McLeod is the executive director of the Woody Guthrie Center. For more information on the exhibits and the work of the Woody Guthrie Center, visit their website at woodyguthriecenter.org. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
A daughter goes to Oregon, part one, watch with the tolls in Oklahoma. It's 1,936.1 miles, but MapQuest has been known to embellish while being annoyingly anal at the same time. My daughter Nina is leaving the plains of Oklahoma, down and upon which the wind comes sweeping, and heading to a winery in Medford, Oregon, where the vineyards and mountains make you know why people move and stay there, and where her boyfriend, a tall, sweet, fit Frenchman with a full head of hair, waits with love, a life, and at least a half dozen bottles of red wine. First, we stop at Old School Bagel Cafe. She starts to cry. What's the matter, honey? I just don't know when we're going to do this again. It takes $6.30 in tolls to get out of Oklahoma. It takes $6.30 in tolls to get to Yukon. It's free to Oregon after that. Your joke here. In Hobart, Nina tells me I will not be allowed to drink as much Diet Coke as I normally drink unless I also drink an equal and corresponding amount of water immediately afterwards, something she really should have mentioned before I agreed to go with her. This trip is a greatest hits album. Nina and I don't need to go over much. We've covered most of the father-daughter business in years past. She just wanted me to come with her. The victory is already secure. They have these giant wind turbines on these giant wind farms in West Texas. Not the face of God, mind you, but therapeutic, mesmerizing, ominous, but soothing. Prettier than oil derricks. Rich Fisher of the station here says, yeah, but you're not a migratory bird who flies into them. Outside of Tucumcari, New Mexico, a billboard. China One Massage and Buffet, $29.99, complete. Clearly the Mugu Gaipan or the sex is going to be disappointing. We've been on the road 8 hours. We stop at something called Klein's Corners for souvenirs and ice cream, mostly because the sign says, worth stopping for and biggest, cleanest restrooms on I-40, which is really quite the claim when you think about it. They were fine, but by no means spectacular. I post this observation on Facebook. Nina responds, always a critic. My bathrooms were lovely, and as it turned out, it was worth stopping since you got a free hat. Yes, the hat. It says Roswell and has a green alien on it. You gonna get some ice cream, I ask? Nah, the woman's kind of bitchy. At the Hilton Garden Inn in Albuquerque, the bed is broken. Tuesday morning, it's 5:39. The bed wins. I'm up. Nina, though, is asleep. I get on Facebook. I'm 55. She's 24. I'm aware of the problems in this picture. We get a $20 discount and free breakfast. I have to write that down. Tell me what you think. As I post this development, I see Nina typing into her cell phone. What did you write, I ask? So not only do I have to endure your millions of status updates on Facebook she posts throughout this trip, now you require me to comment on each one of them. Seriously, Dad, get off Facebook. We've got miles to drive. Lots of beautiful scenery in New Mexico. Thank God we don't have to actually get out of the car to see any of it, because that would put us dangerously close to nature. After the third Ron Paul billboard, Nina asks, is he even still relevant? Luckily, there is also a Meteorites 50% off billboard signed close by, so I don't have to explain to her why he still is. We're eating at a health food restaurant now in Flagstaff, Arizona, with not one but count 'em three kinds of hummus. Such is the love I have for my daughter that I'm even here. It's our first meal without cheese being involved. I mean, for the love of God, they premix pomegranate molasses to their hamburgers. Who would do such a thing? Vegas is in sight. My leg hurts. We took the leftovers. I can smell the hummus.
Barry Friedman is a writer, a stand-up comic, a columnist at Tulsa People magazine, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.